Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Prepare Radio with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good morning and welcome to Prepare Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host. It is Saturday morning and we've been talking about our new series on tithing versus giving according to the scriptures. Now, I've heard from a lot of you, which is great, and I want to address a couple of the things that have come up. There's quite a variety of viewpoints and on tithing and on the different aspects of tithing. But rather than get drawn into some of the, and we're going to mention them here, rather than using points of detail that conflict with the way people are tithing now, our viewpoint is that the distinction is not that we're not tithing correctly, but that there's a distinction, an absolute distinction between tithing and giving, as reflected in the scriptures. Because if we're going to use the scriptures to discuss this topic, that's what we want to use. We want to go ahead and this is what the scriptures say, this is what the Old Covenant says, this is what the New Testament says. So though it's great getting these little tidbits and interesting insights and historical perspective, we don't want to allow the discussion to be diverted into a discussion of wrong tithing and right tithing. Just to give you an idea, and it's very true and it's interesting that the original commandments for people to tithe never involved money. It was always the fruit of the land and livestock. So cows and sheep and wheat and apples, for instance. It was never about money. So the increase was always very practical and would be consumed right away. So, and we're going to go into some of the details here, but that's, to use that as a contrast to what is so often taught today is what we're taught is that because we're a different kind of society, we now have the basis of our exchange is money. Back then, it was much more agrarian based and much more produce, your basic necessities based. So to give someone something, you had to have it. And most people just did not function in terms of money. It was much more the produce they had at hand. So that's interesting. It's fascinating. But it does not address the appropriateness of tithing today. It just says, okay, that's an area where we're doing it wrong. Another insight is that the poor never tithed. It was only to those that were producing, that had an increase. And we could even get into the difference between increase and income. Just because you had an increase, it might not have been income because you may have lost in other areas and vice versa. But again, that goes back to our discussion being based on, is tithing, are we doing it right? And we don't want to get caught up with that. Instead, our discussion is revolving around the difference, the distinction between tithing and giving, the Old Covenant and the New Testament. So, oh, and another great insight is that the tithes were very specifically directed towards the Levites and towards, now this is helpful. I mean, this is gives us an additional insight that does somewhat apply, even though we're not going to go into it in great detail, that the tithes were directed to go to the Levites and to the storehouse to supply the needs of the priests. Now, in the New Testament, in for you and I, you are the priest. Your pastor is not the priest. You are the new priesthood, the chosen generation. You receive tithes. Now, I've studied this out quite some time ago, and this is absolutely accurate. So I thoroughly, support those I'm hearing from that, are adamant about this. It's just, that's just not where we're going to focus. So, down the road, if we want to get into this generation being a new priesthood, what we don't want to do is get into an argument about definitions, defining what is a priest, who is a priest, and describing the distinction between tithing and giving. So much has been, sort of when we talk about a new priesthood, that there right now there's, if we're looking at Malachi and all these other Old Testament mandates for tithing, it's very specific about who the tithing was to go to. And those people no longer exist. Levites don't tithe. I mean, we don't tithe to Levites anymore. What we're being told to do is tithe to our church. But that's in conjunction with supporting the priesthood. But you and I are the priesthood. So I hope that it's clear that, again, it's a valid perspective. It's just not one that's going to help us come to the conclusions about the distinction between the role, not just the role, but the truth, the reality about the distinction between tithing and giving. So when we talk about all these different kinds of subjects, not just tithing, but one of the things we always try to do is refrain from using typical religious language. And the concept of the new priesthood, it's absolutely terrific. But what it does is that you come to the table with your beliefs, I come to the table with mine, other people come with their own definitions and their own history and their own background and their own insights. And so we're at this point in time, they're all great, and it's a great discussion, and we'd love to discuss it. But what we want to do now is stay focused on the distinction between tithing and giving and not get caught up in defining priesthood and whether poor people tithe or not. Another thing, just to get some of these out of the way, is I'm a firm believer that even in giving, if you owe someone money, you can't give until that person is paid, because it's not yours. We've talked about this in other areas before. Like if you borrow your neighbor's lawnmower, you can't give that lawnmower to your brother-in-law. It's not yours. So if you've borrowed money, you can't give it. You can't give to anyone until you pay that back. Now, in that sense, and since we're on this topic for a second, in that sense, there's a huge distinction between the kinds of debt we have. When you sign a contract to make installment payments but don't receive ownership, that's not debt. That's a contract. You're fulfilling your end of the contract, and then at some point in time, you will fulfill that contract, and then you will own that item. Good examples of that are your house, a mortgage, and often people purchase cars that way, your automobile. When you purchase a car and you sign a contract with a bank, they keep the title of your car until you've paid it off. So it's not your car. So basically that's a financial contractual arrangement. That's not a debt that, well, as long as you're paying it according to that contract. Debt that drains us is the debt where we consume what we buy and don't pay for. For instance, when you use a credit card to go to a restaurant or a movie or, you know, buy a book or any time you use a credit card, odds are it's to consume something. You're not planning on returning the item. So that is a true debt. So if you owe credit card money, that any money that comes into you that you would normally give, you can't give because it's not yours. You owe it to someone else. And they have a right. So many people right now are complaining about what the credit card companies are doing, when in fact, you've given them permission to do that because you've not paid, you are receiving full benefit of what you've paid for, or what you've put on credit card, but they've paid for it. This is why there's that verse that says the borrower is a slave to a lender. It's not your money anymore. You can't give it. Which is one of the reasons God really wants all of us out of debt. Now, because you can't be a giver if you're in debt. Because you don't have anything to give if you're in debt. Now, does that make sense? If you've borrowed something from someone, you can't give it away. If you've borrowed money from someone, you can't give to anyone or anything. And by your new nature, you are now a giver. That's your new identity. That's who you are now. So by being in debt, by owing someone money or anything, you are restricting yourself from living like you're living according to your identity. That's why people are just so fearful about when they really stop, or they don't even want to know how much they owe. That's why it's so scary. Because when we find out how much we owe, we find out who's really in control of our lives. You cannot be free to be who you are if you are in debt. Now, since we're on this topic, let's look at real quickly at the other two examples we had about the contractual financial arrangements, like your car and your mortgage. Those aren't the same kind of debt, but they aren't good financial stewardship. You're still indebted to that contract, and when you have a contract that's, you know, 30 years long or you know, 5 years long, you are in a relationship with an organization that you will not be able to get out of until you finish that contract. So that likewise limits your freedom. It's also not financially wise. You can do a much better job by saving it and then purchasing. But understand, when you have, and so many people are finding that out now with mortgages that they can't pay, let's use wisdom from now on and recognize that we restrict our own freedom when we enter into a contract. It's voluntary slavery. Your mortgage company can tell you what you can do because they can sue you if you don't pay them. So if you have a mortgage payment and you lose your job, finding a new one will be restricted by, your options will be restricted according to how much of a payment you have. So we don't want to limit ourselves. We don't want to define our identity and sell our inheritance for immediate gratification. We don't want to, we want to use wisdom. We want to protect our freedom and value it. And this is a good day to be discussing that. Because there's nothing in our own character that wants that freedom limited. We are succumbing to the beliefs and myths and what we're being told, the temptations in our society and even in our church. So just as we are learning to resist debt and contracts in the natural realm, we are also learning within ourselves how to appropriate strength and discipline and patience that we have as part of our character, knowing the freedom that comes with that. Your basic identity is as a giver. That's who you are. And being in debt and signing financial contracts limits that freedom. So there's a lot of differentiations we can look at, a lot of details and a lot of interesting aspects. But what we want to first establish is that, that's not something that's specifically gone into great detail in the scriptures. So the focus, again, of this particular series is on what is written in today's different versions of the scriptures. So let's go back and pick up where we left off last Saturday. We were just finishing up with looking at the tithe before the law was written down. And we saw the different distinctions between the tithe as a verb and the tithe as a noun. But now we want to start really digging into what it looked like when it was written down. What does the scriptures, what do, when people most often refer to tithing, they are referring to what is written down as part of the law. Now, the law is one of those terms as well that at some point in time we're probably going to have to get into as far as describing the different aspects of it, because we have a distorted view of the law as well. There is no, you know, if you talk to an Orthodox Jew and ask them about the law in the Old Testament, they wouldn't understand what you were talking about. You know, they'd ask you, are you talking about the Torah? Are you talking about before the judges? You know, what specifically? They did not see things the way we think they see things and the way they lived. And we'll get a taste of that by studying the tithe. So the first, as the law was codified. Now again, this is another area where when you start to discuss the scriptures, we have a lot of misbeliefs about how and when and who and why they were written. We're just going to take it at face value. And so, you know, as much as I love hearing from you about, yes, you know, Moses did not write the books of Moses, those kinds of things, you know, we're just not going to get into it at this point in time. We're just going to take them at face value and stay focused on the distinction between tithing and giving. So the first, according to the Bibles you and I use, the codified law, the written law of Moses, the first tithing was instituted as part of the covenant in Leviticus 27. And I'm going to go ahead, just for the sake of you who are listening to this and don't have, you know, for instance, you're driving or something and you don't have the ease of flipping your scriptures out, I'm going to go ahead and read it. And I'm going to read it kind of fast, though, because the details aren't that important, just the description. Just get the feel of it. So Leviticus 27:30-34. A tithe of everything from the land, whether grain from the soil or fruit from the trees, belongs to the Lord. It is holy to the Lord. If a man redeems any of his tithe, he must add a fifth of the value to it. The entire tithe of the herd and flock, every tenth animal that passes under the shepherd's rod, will be holy to the Lord. He must not pick out the good from the bad or make any substitution. If he does make a substitution, both the animal and its substitute become holy and cannot be redeemed. These are the commands the Lord gave Moses on Mount Sinai for the Israelites. Now, one thing I always just wondered was, if you make a substitute, who's going to know? But we'll not get into that at this point. But under the law, one-tenth of everything from the land, plant or animal, was considered holy and belonged to God. But this portion could be redeemed. In other words, it could be bought back. But a fifth part of the value had to be added. So there had to be a profit. There could be no substitutions or alterations. You couldn't switch one cow for another, for instance. Again, if you tried and someone found out, both would be considered part of the tithe. But, you know, if you don't tell anyone, I'm not sure. There was a mechanism. There was nobody standing there checking up on you to make sure that you counted every tenth. It wasn't until the book of Numbers, chapter 18, that we're going to go into next, that further instruction was given in regard to implementing the tithe. In other words, what to do with the cows and the grain and the sheep and the apples and the wheat. It was just the initial institution was just, it belongs to the Lord. Doesn't say what to do with it. So they had to come up with, okay, what do you do with it? Then, so in Numbers, it was instituted that the tithe goes to the Levites. And we're reading in Numbers 18, 19 through 28. All the heave offerings of the holy things, which the children of Israel, and at some point in time we may discuss, we may or not, discuss the different offerings. Because there's offerings, there's tithes, there's heave offerings, there's gifts. There's so many different rules and regulations and opportunities. And we, from our mindset, often meld them all together, mix them all together. Bottom line was that as a nation, there was a government that needed to, basically the tithe was a replacement for our tax. So it supported the government. The priesthood was the government, the king as well. So we won't go too much into that, but understand that tithing was not the only, it was basically a way of raising goods to support the priesthood. But there were other ways and other reasons and other times, and we're going to go into how those tithes were addressed, but not the other offerings. So all the heave offerings of the holy things, which the children of Israel offer to the Lord, I have given to you and your sons, he's talking to the Levites, to your sons and daughters with you as an ordinance forever. It is a covenant of salt forever before the Lord with you and your descendants with you. Then the Lord said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in their land, nor shall you have any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the children of Israel. Now this is, before we go on, this is one of those areas where people get the idea that the priests aren't supposed to have any other, like, job or income. That they're supposed to get their full support only from the people that they're ministering to in their pastorate, their church. But likewise, they aren't supposed to have an inheritance. In other words, they're not supposed to have their own home. They're not supposed to have their own car, their own goods. It's all supposed to be provided. So it's an either, you know, if you're going to buy into some of this, you're going to buy into all of it. In other words, there would be someone else assigned in the church to buy the food for the pastor and the pastor's family. That they would basically have no money of their own and make no decisions of their own. That's certainly not what's being done today. And because of time constraints, we're going to go ahead and stop there before we go into the rest of it. But the point is that there's a lot of details that we are so often taught. Tithing is from the scriptures. You know, it's not a matter of salvation, but it's a matter of pleasing God. And it's a matter of if you don't do it, there's going to be consequences. And yet when we really get into it and start questioning what's really there, it doesn't line up. we're going to have to make decisions about whether we're going to do what God tells us to do or we're going to listen to other people. And as I've said before, when we get to the giving part, hopefully that will make it very clear. And if you don't want to wait for this series to conclude, check out our profile page. We've got a link there for where you can download the PDF that discusses all these issues. Well, happy 4th of July. Happy Independence Day for all everybody here in the U.S. Thank you for tuning in. This is Diane Thomas of Prepare Radio. Have a great weekend.